But if you can contain your own energy and stay in yourself and be present to your surroundings and become one with your surroundings, become in the same state of simple being, then the animals feel very safe to come close to you and even investigate, because they can sense that you are in a similar frequency. And it's not just animals, by the way. When I was studying my psychology degree, we learned of an experiment with plants where very sensitive motion detection devices were attached to the leaves of plants in a greenhouse where they were being grown. And they would have about 20 people walk through this greenhouse. And one person was told to walk up to one plant and to rip its leaves apart and destroy it. When that happened, all the other plants registered a very slight movement away from the person, as much as a plant can move. And then what's more, the plants have memory. The next day, they would have the surviving plants in the same greenhouse with the same instruments attached to them. And the same people would walk through. But this time they had mixed up the order of the people. So it wasn't person number 7 now that was going to, you know, ruin the plant. They put him at the back of the line. But the moment that person came through, all the plants again tried to move away from that person, remembering what happened the day before. So who we are being is much more important than what we're doing when we are in nature or even in the presence of our own animals. Think about our own pets and our own animals in the typical environments in which we live. We're not present. We're on devices or phones or watching movies. Our bodies might be there, but we're absent. And it can be extremely lonely for our pets to have this empty shell of the human there who's not engaging with them, who's not hanging out in the same frequency. That's not companionship or friendship. That's just us being like robots in their environments, and they feel it.
Hallo Herz, schön, dass du eingeschaltet hast. Ich bin Nadine Gerhardt und dieser Podcast ist mein absolutes Herzensprojekt, um dich zu inspirieren auf deinem ganz individuellen Weg zu mehr Fülle, Liebe und Lebensfreude. Hallo ihr Herzen, ich freue mich total, dass ihr heute eingeschaltet habt. Ich bin total nervös, das ist so verrückt, weil dieses Interview ist schon Wochen her und allein schon als dieses Interview jetzt wieder losging und ich mir es angehört habe, um es zurechtzuschneiden für euch, boah, sind mir wieder die Tränen in die Augen geschossen. Es war das bisher berührendste Interview, was ich je hatte. Mir sind so oft die Augen in die Tränen geschossen. Und ich empfehle euch sehr, auch wenn ihr die Möglichkeit habt, euch das Video, wie ihr uns beide seht, auch auf YouTube anzusehen. Denn ich habe schon viele Menschen erlebt, so viele Menschen, Gurus, sonst wie Mentoren, Lehrer in meinem Leben. Und ich habe keinen Mensch so präsent erlebt wie diese Frau. Es ist mir eine absolute Ehre, sie heute hier im Podcast zu haben, denn ich habe über ein halbes Jahr gewartet auf dieses Interview und sie gibt so selten Interviews und ich freue mich umso mehr, dass Anna Breitenbach heute bei uns bei Hypersonic ist. Und sie hat eine Gabe, die wir alle in uns tragen, aber die wir total verlernt haben. Und sie ist Tierkommunikatorin, sie ist Tieraktivistin, Naturschützerin und Rednerin. Und ich kann jetzt schon wieder heulen, weil es sind so wichtige, so immens wichtige Aussagen. Und ihr merkt schon, das berührt mich jetzt schon direkt zu Beginn. Und ich bin zutiefst dankbar, dass wir dieses Interview heute machen konnten. Ich habe sie so viele Fragen Löcher in den Bauch gefragt, ja, und es waren so berührende Antworten. Also hört es euch bis zum Schluss an. Ich möchte auch noch was ganz Wichtiges zum Schluss des Podcasts sagen. Deswegen bitte hört es euch bis zum Schluss an. Das werde ich jetzt nicht vorwegnehmen. Wir haben darüber gesprochen, wie auf welcher Ebene sie mit Tieren kommuniziert. Übrigens, ich bin nicht der Riesentierfan, also ich renne keiner Katze und keinem Hund hinterher, oh, wie süß, wie süß. Und trotzdem ist dieses Thema so immens wichtig, ja. Also, wir haben darüber gesprochen, warum es uns Menschen so schwer fällt, unsere ursprünglichen Anlagen zu nutzen. Und was es ist beispielsweise, was Tiere wirklich vom Menschen brauchen. Wie können wir tiergerechtes Leben anerkennen? Weil so oft ist es ja der Fall, dass von Menschen Tiere ja vermenschlicht werden. Und das ist ja auch nicht tiergerecht. Dann, was wünschen sich die Tiere? Wie wünschen sie ja den Umgang mit ihnen? Sie erzählt was zu den Tieren in Schlachthöfen. Und ja, ach Gott, hört es euch einfach an, was soll ich euch hier erzählen? Es ist, ja, most amazing. und ich wünsche euch ganz eine ganz wundervolle Zeit mit Anna Breitenbach. Und ja, ganz viel Liebe.
I have been looking forward to this interview since many months and cannot even express in words how happy I was about the confirmation. Thank you for being here and wanting to share your experience and your wisdom with us, and warmly welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, Anna, you are a professional animal communicator and you have been practicing for over 18 years in South Africa, in Europe, in the US with domestic and wild animals. You have the gift which probably every human being carries unused within himself to merge with animals and to speak their wordless language. And you are also the subject of the documentary movie The Animal Communicator, released in 2013. And what everyone should have seen, I send it to everybody out every month. It's crazy. And I would like to know, what is your personal goal?
Well, I don't know how much of my personal goal is actually up to me. Mm-hmm. it's my passion and my interest and my curiosity, and then somehow that has become my path. And I feel so blessed that I did in my 30s already leave the corporate world and take the step into what, as Joseph Campbell would say, to follow your bliss, to really notice. Mm-hmm. Where your curiosity and your passion lies, and then perhaps then one's goal is more what life wants to have happen, you know, through me, if we are all just being on our path authentically. And so it seems to be that what I'm busy with is somehow being a voice for the ones who are normally voiceless and who humans can't hear. Meaning the non-human animals and also the plants and the wild spaces, giving them a voice that perhaps humans can consider their points of view and their perspectives.
Yeah, wonderful. And at what level do you communicate with the animals?
That's a very good question, because so many people mistake what I do for perhaps animal psychology. Mm-hmm. Like being a cat psychologist or a dog behavioral therapist or a horse whisperer, meaning that there's some kind of physical observation of the animal's behavior, and then an analysis of that behavior, and although acknowledging the emotions behind the behavior, looking at often then retraining and these sorts of things, and all of that is not the level at which I communicate. I'm working purely in the energetic communication. And when I started out on this journey in the year 2000, I did a lot of reading and studying of quantum physics that explains how telepathy happens between beings. Since the 1880s, experiments have been happening both in UK and Europe and in the USA in telepathy between two humans who are a far distance apart from each other. But in more recent decades, Rupert Sheldrake, his website is Sheldrake, Sheldrake.org. He was the first to prove scientifically the telepathic connection and information transfer between humans and their dogs, for example. And so this is telepathic communication, meaning it is silent. It is not at all based on observation of the animal's facial expression or behavior, and it's completely independent of distance. It's as easy to communicate with a dog who's sitting right in front of me as one who is on the other side of the world. As long as I have some way in my own mind to uniquely identify or associate with that individual animal. So perhaps a photograph or a description or something allows me to tune into that signature frequency. So it's all very explainable by quantum physics. And that sounds still all quite sort of mental and scientific, but really it's a conversation that happens in heart-centeredness. Mm. One has to, as the human communicating, one has to drop from the cognitive mental centers into the heart space. Mm-hmm. And it's there that we experience and know connection and can be more in touch with our intuition. And so another way to describe this communication might be intuitive communication, mm-hmm. our own intuition, our own instinct. Mm-hmm. And so it's at that invisible and silent energetic level that I communicate.
Mm. Yeah, wow. And is there a difference in which genera you communicate with?
In which
genera?
Oh, which genre?
Genre.
Okay, sorry. That's quite all right.
German English.
I figured it out by the spelling. That's fine. No, the process is exactly the same. So mm-hmm. it can, you know, we humans think, full stop, but one of the things we think is that other mammals, other warm-blooded animals with, you know, eyes, and that they are more intelligent. And so we therefore think that it's more easy to communicate with them. But none of that is true. We just suffer from this anthropomorphizing. We suffer from this prejudice as a human to only value things that are close to human more than other species. So when it comes to this essence-to-essence connection on the quantum level, there's no difference at all that I'm communicating with a jellyfish in the ocean, which I've had to do a few times when I'm free diving, mm-hmm. or whether I'm communicating with a big majestic elephant or a snake or a cockroach in the kitchen. There's no difference in the process, and there's also no difference in the quality mm-hmm. and the fullness of what is possible on a content level. The level of awareness of a cockroach and a jellyfish and an elephant or a wolf, their level of self-awareness, their desires, their understanding of the environment are equally equally mature and equally complex.
Mm. It's so interesting when you talk, because I get water into my eyes. It's like it's like goosebumps when you talk, and that's what I feel right now. Is I have never been talking with a person which is so present like you, with your eyes, with your energy. It's amazing to feel that. And I think that's a big present, a big, not present, a big a gift, yeah, to that people can also feel if they can connect it with nature, with animals, because it gets to it, right?
Yes, absolutely. And in that regard, the animals and nature have been my biggest teachers about these states of being, like presence. Mm-hmm. Because animals, for example, are just so present and very authentic. They are just being who they're being, very honest and in their environment, and being responsive to what's happening in the moment. Mm-hmm. They don't wear these masks and cover up their true feelings and hide things like we humans do. Mm-hmm. And so from now, 20 years of communicating with animals, not full time and not every day, but somehow I feel like I have been able, they've been my role models, mm-hmm. not as a cognitive act on my part, but by being in their company, one can't help but come into resonance with that state of being. And in fact, that is a prerequisite for this telepathic communication. In English, we have an expression that describes good communication, even between people, when they're really, vibing and understanding each other well. We say that these people are on the same wavelength and they get each other, they understand each other. Well, that might just be a saying in English, but it has its roots in the truth of quantum science. Because when two beings are in very different states of being, maybe one is more agitated and uptight or distracted, and the other, so let's say that first one is a human, and the other being might be the cat, your domestic cat, who is sitting calmly, eyes half open, just, you know, just exuding and radiating their isness. That's a very different energy coming off them. That can be measured by various forms of scientific photography, for example. Kirlian photography can literally show the electromagnetic emissions from these beings, any object. Now, the emissions coming off that peaceful cat will be very long wavelength, low amplitude, low frequency. And the human who walks into the room is going to be a very spiky, you know, high amplitude, short wavelength, agitated state. And what happens naturally, because in life, there's always a dynamic movement towards harmony, harmonizing. That's just one of the mysterious laws of how energy works. And so when there are two very different energies, it's nature's way to try to balance them out and find the average, find the place of harmony, find the average. And that's what happens. We, the human walking into that scenario, might become more peaceful when we see that peaceful cat. Meanwhile, the cat gets a bit of a fright because we've interrupted the energetic state in the room by walking in. Even if we come quietly, physically, when we walk in with that state of being in our minds or our stress levels, it's going to affect the field. And what happens is these two kinds of wavelengths interact with each other in invisible ways and work with each other to find one combined result. And that is then, meaning we are on the same wavelength. The cat and myself would now both be in a similar state of being. And when we are in a resonant, similar state of being, then we can know each other fully. Then we have full awareness of each other in that moment. And to come back to your observation then, you know, me just hanging out with animals, particularly when they're doing whatever they're doing, the bird that is singing or looking for food amongst, you know, the grass or the bushes or the leaves, the insect crawling slowly. If I'm just in the presence of that, I am absorbing and being affected by their energetic states. And that allows me to become more present and more in my own nature.
Oh, yes. In this documentation movie, you sit in water for hours and all the fishes came to you. It was this energy. It was amazing to see that.
It is. You know, it's quite interesting how if people are trying to get really close to an animal, you know, a fish or a bird or something, because they really, really want to, even from a place of appreciation, they're actually going to push that animal away because their energy is very focused. It may as well be just a rifle or a gun that you're pointing at the animal. But if you can contain your own energy and stay in yourself and be present to your surroundings and become one with your surroundings, become in the same state of simple being, then the animals feel very safe to come close to you and even investigate because they can sense that you are in a similar frequency. And it's not just animals, by the way. When I was studying my psychology degree, we learned of an experiment with plants where very sensitive motion detection devices were attached to the leaves of plants in a greenhouse where they were being grown. And they would have about 20 people walk through this greenhouse. And one person was told to walk up to one plant and to rip its leaves apart and destroy it. When that happened, all the other plants registered a very slight movement away from the person, as much as a plant can move. And then what's more, the plants have memory. The next day, they would have the surviving plants in the same greenhouse with the same instruments attached to them. And the same people would walk through. But this time, they had mixed up the order of the people. So it wasn't person number seven now that was going to, you know, ruin the plant. They put him at the back of the line. But the moment that person came through, all the plants again tried to move away from that person, remembering what happened the day before. So who we are being is much more important than what we're doing. when we are in nature or even in the presence of our own animals. Think about our own pets and our own animals in the typical environments in which we live. We're not present. We're on devices or phones or watching movies. Our bodies might be there, but we're absent. And it can be extremely lonely for our pets to have this empty shell of the human there who's not engaging with them, who's not hanging out in the same frequency. That's not companionship or friendship. That's just us being like robots in their environments, and they feel it.
Oh, yes, I could cry. all the minutes you talk, it's very heartfelt. Is it heartfelt? Why is it so difficult for us humans to use our original facilities?
I think for two reasons. Firstly, we, on some strange level, we decided that we are better than and more superior than the other animals, the non-human animals. And so we've developed this superiority complex, really, starting about 12,000 years ago when the nomadic and the hunter-gatherer peoples began to keep more than they need and to take some wild animals and keep them behind fences. So not have to go to the hard work of tracking and hunting, to take some wild plants and start to grow them closer to home, and so started agriculture. And in these ways, we began to change our own psyche to see all of the animals and plants, and in fact, even water, you know, the rest of the natural world, we started to see them as resources, which is just for our good, you know, just for our good. Instead of, as Robin Wall Kimmerer says, to see them as earthly gifts, which is a much better relationship to have with these things upon which our life depends. And so we created a great separation. We took ourselves away from being directly related to the others and decided we are more superior and more intelligent because of the way our brains function. But the way our brains function doesn't make us more or less intelligent than a bee in a beehive, for example. Just know the incredible intelligence of each individual bee to do what they do for the benefit of the hive, for that matter, for the greater good. And so we think we're better than the others, and then science goes around trying to prove the intelligence of animals as if it needs proving. And then I think the second reason is related to that. We've become very mental. We operate in our life mostly from above the neck. We're very mental. We fill our days. We don't follow the natural cycles anymore. We don't come to rest when the sun sets. We, you know, have artificial light. We keep our minds busy. We become addicted to information and experience and thinking. And culturally, around the world, we've lost the rites of passage and the processes or the ceremonies or the rituals or the mentors or the elders that would help us be reminded of these ways of being. We've lost the stories. We've lost those states of being. Now being out in the woods is considered dangerous, and you don't want to go barefoot, and you don't want to get wet, and everything becomes about comfort. So our disconnection is extreme, and that's all. It's a lot, but that is all. You see, these ways of connecting and communicating are completely natural because our human brain structure has not changed at all in the last few thousand years. So we still are wired that way to be deeply connected and to know things intuitively. And so when I say all of these disconnections, it's like that's all. And what I mean is we only have to take away these distractions to be able to come back into our natural state of connectedness. We don't have to go and learn a fancy skill or get some mystery school training or anything really complicated like that. We only have to remove what is in the way.
So wonderful. Yeah, because we are also consuming everything. Not only Netflix. It's like, I want to learn this. I want to learn this. Mm-hmm. But it's better to unlearn. Right.
Absolutely. Unlearn. And in fact, even this, if one wants to get one's head around telepathic communication, it's about remembering. Yes. Yeah. It's not even a skill to learn. It's just about remembering and becoming still. And so any practice that you might have in your life that can promote stillness within yourself is fantastic. That will allow your intuition to become more in the foreground. Any practice, it can be yoga, movement, medicine, walks in nature, some, you know, creative expression, you know, of course, meditating and so on. Any practice that promotes stillness inside yourself mm-hmm. is going to heal the separation and the distractedness.
Oh, wow, yeah. And like we have forgotten that we are brothers and sisters from animals, from the nature. That's so important. What is it that animals really need from humans?
I think we've touched on it already in some ways. They really just, they need our presence. They need our presence. And then in that presence can arise our human awareness of what might be needed for them in particular at that time. If an animal that we're living with, or a neighbor's dog or something, has a health problem or has, you know, is being abused or something, they are just, they're in that stressful state and they're trying to show it, and they're perhaps trying to show it. And so if we can just be present, we can notice these things. So they want us to be present, not only because they might want to tell us something, because maybe they don't have something that's urgent to say, but just for the sheer joy of hanging out together and of being in shared awareness. It's a beautiful kind of companionship. And so when we are present, we can be truly in companionship with them and be connected. Of course, on the larger scale, what they would like from us is to really hear their distress, hear their needs, and care for them in their environments. And they would love their natural environments to be protected, that they may be allowed to live their wild natural lives with the no or minimum intervention. So, of course, one knows all about, you know, the forests that are being chopped down to make way for agriculture and so on. And what they would want is for their lives and livelihoods to be taken into account when there is any kind of human development. And for, at the very least, if there has to be land destruction for human purpose, at the very least, to leave some areas wild in a way that suits them, wildlife corridors that connect areas, give them safe places, even free from noise pollution, where they can breed in safety and escape danger or hunt in safety without all the noise pollution. So there are many creative ways to design our human lives around and with nature if we care. So they ask for our care and consideration as well.
Yeah. How can we recognize an animal-friendly life, which sometimes does not happen in a positive sense, and when owners humanize their animals or their domestic animals?
This is a problem. It is a problem for many people. Their animals are some kind of substitute for something that their psychology needs. You know, maybe they're very lonely, maybe they're wanting to mother or father, and then they end up calling their animals their children. Now that's very dishonoring, actually. Imagine you have a dog who's 3 years old, 13 years old, 16 years old, still being called a child, but being, more importantly, being treated like a child. Now that's not honoring of that adult animal's sentience, meaning self-awareness, their soul purpose, their fullness of expression, their maturity. You know, we need to, at the very least, we need to honor our animal companions as that, as companions, as adult best friends. And sure, we are their caregivers as well. They are our dependents practically. And what an act of trust on their part. Mm-hmm. For most people, their animals are locked inside, you know, while they are away. They are stripped of their ability to feed themselves, the most basic survival need. If a person doesn't come home, that animal starves. Maybe no one ever knows that they're locked inside and trapped. So their most basic need has been taken away from them. And in that respect, they are our dependents and they're incredibly trusting of us. But in other ways, they are companions and they might be our best friends. They might be our teachers, our healers, our guides as well, all these wonderful things. They are not our children, and they do not enjoy being humanized. They do not enjoy being dressed up in outfits for Instagram photos. They do not enjoy going to cat shows or dog shows. I'm personally very much against breeders making and refining the genetics of particular breeds of animals, again, usually for aesthetic purposes, to look more beautiful. And we get these breeds with, you know, very squashed noses that they can hardly breathe, and they live short lives in great discomfort. Plus, of course, there are millions and millions and millions and millions of homeless animals in shelters around the world, just waiting for that second chance to actually have a life to live. So please, for anyone watching this, please adopt an animal who has had a taste of life and had it removed from them. Gosh, what a gift you could give to, again, give this one life. So yes, we humanize animals a lot. And I've seen, when I used to do pet consultations, which I don't the last 10 years or so, I would see a lot of psychological afflictions and disorders in pets, because they were living so close to the humans and taking on some of the humans' issues, or in this very unhealthy dynamic where they're acting out part of the human troubles in the household or with the person. But this last 10 years or so, I work exclusively with wildlife and nature and human-wildlife conflict and so on. But what a wonderful thing to be able to look into an animal's eyes and simply ask them, show me who you are, right, and what is your soul purpose. And if we're very lucky, the animals in our lives might be here partly to journey with us, and what they're up to might have something to do with us. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that is their only purpose. Like we humans, we've got many purposes and many roles. We're not only up to one thing. We're certainly, you know, a daughter or a son. We're also a colleague. We're a friend. We're, you know, we are many things. And them too, they are many things. They're not only here in service to us. Because if we believe they're all only here in service to us, we are once again making ourselves superior and making ourselves like God, who deserves their enslavement. Mm,
yes. Yeah, so true. And do the animals want us to communicate with them even more? And if so, what would they like to communicate about?
They would love us to become more present and connected, yes.
Thank you.
And so from that, a communication may arise, you know. Mm-hmm. Even on a practical, everyday level, I live with two cat friends, and it's very helpful to them just on a daily life level that I communicate with them. So when I'm going to be leaving for meetings or for a few days even, I let them know when I'm coming back. And that can stop them being anxious during that time that I'm away and wondering when am I coming back and looking out for me, or worried about, you know, feeding and routine. So I can just project to them, if I'm going to be away for 2 days, then I will, in my mind, I will run through daylight, nighttime twice to convey the passing time. And then they'll know that I'm coming back after that amount of time has passed. So it's very, very helpful to help animals avoid danger from busy city streets, or you're crossing the road, or there's a dog in the park who's loose and looking, you know, acting very aggressive or something. You can literally, even with obedience training, you can start to do that telepathically. So it's wonderful to involve animals in our everyday lives. If we're going to be making some big change, like taking them somewhere or moving house, or there's someone else coming to stay, we can show them first what's going to happen and explain the reasons why silently. Mm-hmm. And that can help them so much to feel partnered with, to feel included. And of course, they would love us to communicate with them about their choices. Mm-hmm. If they have a choice in the matter, we can ask them what they would want and how they feel about things. Mm-hmm. And whatever feelings we get back from them can become the material we use to then find a solution or a compromise together.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Can you please say something about animals in slaughterhouses?
Mm. I think it links back to what I was saying about not all animals are here to serve us.
Yeah.
Because I've read in many a book as well that some theories that it is the sole purpose of cows and sheep and chickens to become food for humans. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, this gets tricky in this linear world, because in this three-dimensional world, we tend to make meaning of things, and you know, there is a paradox, and two things can be true at the same time. So they haven't come here to be slaughterhouse animals and to live that dreadful life, as short as it is, in a lot of pain and agony. That's not something that that they're signing up to do gladly, because, you know, they need to serve us and make that sacrifice. And yet it's also true that that just is what's happening. And so on that level, it is the destiny of those ones incarnate in that way. It is their destiny, because guess what? That just is what's happening anyway. And life is just ever unfolding. And so it's, you know, in life in general, I think it's less about what we're doing and more about how we are doing it. So there are plenty of farmers who have ethical practices, mm-hmm. who are still raising animals and raising vegetables for consumption, because plants are as intelligent and as sentient and self-aware as animals. So, you know, it's not often, and again, in this very human-focused world and our idea of hierarchy of intelligence, it's not often that there are campaigns to save the carrots or the corn from cruel farming practices. But they feel that those carrots and those corn that are grown with pesticides, chemicals in unnatural rows without environmental protection, not allowed to grow their natural patterns or shapes even, they feel that. They feel that, and it's a distress for them as much as for the young chick who has its beak clipped when it's born into a chicken farm and then is made to be fat so it can't move and just has to, you know, produce eggs. So distress is felt by them all. And so what I can encourage people to do is to support local and organic and ethical sources of vegetables and animals, because again, it's how can that farmer, while they're raising their animals, can they have a good relationship with them? Can these animals have as close to natural a life as possible, outdoors, freedom of choice, freedom of movement, the ability to make friends and have family groups while they're growing up? And it is true that all the non-human animals do not have the same problems and issues with physical death that humans do. Animals do see death simply as a transition in a state of being. And when they've had a happy life, there's not going to be distress in them at the time the life comes to end. There can be great compassion and understanding and shared love, even in a slaughtering scenario. So yeah, this is a journey I've traveled quite a lot within myself. I was vegetarian and then vegan, and then began having very conscious conversations with all sorts of plant species. And I thought, oh no, now what? I'm being cruel to my tomato and my salad. But it was a whole crisis of conscience and led me to explore so much more. And I've come to this place of honoring and saying thank you for all life that might be on my plate. And it is the circle of life. I mean, one day when whatever aspect of me leaves this body, my body will again become food for the earthworms, hopefully. Yeah. So we are all in the circle of life. It's about how we live and how we treat others when we are alive. Mm-hmm. And kindness and love matter much more than the fact that we're all going to die anyway physically.
Yes. And I'm sure we eat this fear and this this anxious energy. Stress energy. It's because it's in all the stuff, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And when they're having a very stressful, anxious, traumatic, horrendous death, yes, that, mm-hmm. that remains in the food that we eat as well. Mm. Although we should not be supporting those practices for different reasons, out of kindness and compassion for them, not only because we're worried about our health and absorbing that fear. I think it's a choice for everyone else to make for themselves, but just mm-hmm. don't lose sight of the fact that all of our plants are conscious as well, and they deserve to be loved and treated with as much respect and thanksgiving for offering their lives for our consumption.
Can you please how do you tell mosquitoes not to bite?
Well, it's not about telling them, because that can sound like an instruction. It's more about asking very nicely. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. If we have a request of an animal, it is about asking without attachment to the outcome. Because when we do respect all life, we also respect their choice to make their they can decide what they want. They can hear our request and then decide yes, no, maybe. But when it does come to mosquitoes in particular, firstly, they just need a drop or two of blood for their own purposes, for the female mosquitoes to complete their life cycle of egg production. Now, I happen to have liters of blood. I can certainly spare a couple of drops. But in my mind, I don't like that, you know, buzzing sound that they make. And I also realize that if they've had some of my blood to drink, they're not going to fly. They're too heavy. So then they won't make the sound and then all is peaceful. They've got what they want and I've got the sleep I want. Mm-hmm. So that's how it works. I let them feed. But sometimes if I'm in an area where there are mosquitoes who might be carrying the malaria parasite, mm-hmm. that could be deadly to me, then I ask them that I use natural repellent. I just use natural repellent on my skin so that they don't come to land. Mm-hmm. But if I am letting them bite me, sometimes afterwards, or most people will get a very itchy spot on the skin. You want to scratch, 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 because your body is having a histamine or a mildly allergic reaction to the substance that the mosquitoes secrete. So when they come to bite you and they push their needle into your skin, they are pushing out of themselves a substance that makes your blood become more thin. Mm. It's an anticoagulant, so that the blood can flow more easily into them. And it's that substance that our body reacts to. Mm-hmm. So if I'm feeling peaceful and calm and loving towards mosquitoes, I say, you're welcome to come sit down and feed, but please just hold back from secreting that stuff. Mm. So it's a little bit harder work for them, but they do. They still put their needle in and they take the blood. And when they fly away, I can't even see where they've been on my arm, not a single pinprick mark. And I don't get that response from my body. So that's a good example of a compromise where we're sort of meeting halfway.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. My best friend, she lives very new in Bali, and she said, oh, so many mosquitoes, they bite me all night, all day. Perfect. That's a good idea. I will talk to her and tell her. And how can we get to know ourselves through animals and nature?
That is quite a thing, because animals and nature will reflect to us who we really being in that moment. They will reflect that to us and they will even respond to that. So if we walk into the woods or down the street with an agitated or upset inner state, the birds are going to make more sounds. Those that can get away, animals will try to get away from us to avoid us. So we humans are a big disturbance on the landscape, and that can be a reflection of our mental state. And very quickly, if we manage our mental state and come back into calmness and slow our breathing and empty our mind, then nature will relax around us. Mm-hmm. But even further than that, there are a lot of ways in which animals can really help us understand ourselves better and show us who we are. This goes into the realm of the sort of the shadow work, which I know is something that you also specialize in. And so many treasures and gifts are to be found in us doing our shadow work. You know, in these times and in a lot of the new age circles, everyone is trying to reach for the light and some ascension path, and we're just suppressing the shadow the whole time. But and that creates a very unfortunate polarity instead of us coming more into a state of oneness. And so even our own reactions to animals can point to us what we need to resolve inside ourselves. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine in my wildlife work, I'm involved with a lot of very extreme situations, animal hunting and poaching and devastation and murder and so on. And of course, the animals are very distressed about that and running and nowhere to hide. And I deal with this all the time. And in earlier years, I used to get very angry with the humans who were performing these crimes against nature, very angry and want to be the activist who was going to, you know, try and do something about it or help them understand they shouldn't and all of this. But noticing this pattern in my own reactions made me realize that that's something unresolved, you know, unresolved in myself. And I had to go and explore what that is and what is that polarity that's playing out inside myself. How can I rather find, having looked at and understood something about that those uncomfortable feelings inside myself, how can I choose a sort of like a middle pathway to hold both sides of any experience, to hold them both in love and understanding, and to not be completely emotionally destroyed myself? You know, self-care also comes into it. And so animals in nature often call us into examining our reactions to them, our upset, our mental ideas, our emotional distress, and to work with that. In fact, in September with a colleague, I'm launching an online course called For the Love of Animals.
Yes.
it's specifically a call to the heart, because we're acknowledging that it's for the love of animals that we are drawn into care and compassion. And then how do we deal with what comes up? Mm. How can we develop our witness, our stable, solid witness inside ourselves that can allow us to be more clear in communication, allow us to remain more centered, and be truly helpful beyond our ideas of having to, you know, go into good and bad stories.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, I will do this online course for sure. If you could be an animal, what would you be?
I often joke and say I would love to come back as one of my own cats. Except I suppose if I did that, I wouldn't be here too. But yeah. Oh boy, I must say, even since I was a small child in Cape Town, I was always fascinated with cats, particularly the big cat species. I was always making my school projects about lions or cheetahs and dreaming of them a lot. And there's something about the way in which cats are so embodied, unapologetically embodied, and just being themselves. And and also they so consistently in a sort of a state of just holding space, and maybe have access to other dimensions of knowing. They might be pretending to be sleeping 22 hours a day, but I'm not buying it. I think they're up to something else. So, and for me, in my personal path too, mentally and emotionally, I've been very strong in my work, but my body has taken the hit, and a lot of the physical distresses have been mirroring what's happening on the planet or with the species I'm working with. So I guess that's possibly also why I'm attracted to imagining being a cat, just for that sheer joy of being in such a fluid body that is so agile and yet doesn't have to, you know, run around to prove anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. And which story of animals touched you most when you look back? I'm sure there are a lot, but is there maybe one story?
Well, yes, it's quite short, but, and it wasn't actually an animal even, it was a sunflower. But I was studying, so-called studying, and an advanced workshop in interspecies communication, and I was sitting out with my notebook and pen in a field looking at this beautiful sunflower that had so many bees on it, that the sunflower, although there was no wind that day, the sunflower was even moving a lot because there were so many bees coming, like armies of bees coming to obviously suck the nectar. And I didn't at the time realize I was having a very sort of human judgment of it. So my question to the sunflower was, gosh, you know, aren't the bees bothering you? Aren't they bothering you? So many at a time, isn't it overwhelming? Which was of course, completely human projection. But I learned it was a projection, because the sunflower's answer essentially was, well, no, the bees are kissing me with their awareness. And that was so touching. It was so multidimensional and so touching. So right there, I learned a lesson from sunflower.
Oh, yes. Again, tears in my eyes. So wonderful. My very last question. If you had the opportunity to wave a magic wand and wish something for the world, what would it be?
Oh, I would just love to see a harmony of creatures, all of us seeing each other as friends and co-creating every day, co-creating in all of our local environments, whatever's possible. Mm-hmm. Imagine that your job as an architect or an engineer or a city worker for the plumbing water system and you actually go and ask the rats living underneath the drains in the cities, what would be best for you? Which way should we have the water run? Imagine asking the land before starting any building project, where would you like something rearranged? Where do you need your stability to be maintained that we don't build there? How would you like the building to suit you and to add to your health? This is what I would love, is for every little decision that humans make that involves the outdoors and even what we are using indoors and putting into the water systems and that, that every little decision is made in consultation with the others who may be affected by it. Because the sense of community and joyful coexistence that's possible from that is just amazing.
Hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah. Such wonderful words. I can't explain it in words. My heart is full of love, and I'm so, so thankful that you came to our podcast and to tell all your speak about your experience. And I only can say thank you so, so, so much.
Well, thank you for caring and for being a channel for people to be touched by these possibilities. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ich kann überhaupt gar nicht in Worte ausdrücken, wie dankbar ich für dieses Interview bin mit Anna Breitenbach. Ich würde am liebsten sofort in den Flieger nach Kapstadt steigen und Richtung Südafrika fliegen, um ihr in die Arme zu fallen, weil diese Menschen braucht die Welt. Ihr merkt, mir fehlen einfach die Worte. Aber ich wollte euch ja noch ein bisschen was mitgeben. Zum einen hat Anna Breitenbach mit ihrem wunderbaren Kollegen Brad Lovelin einen Online-Kurs gestaltet, der jetzt im September anfängt. Und ich bin auf jeden Fall dabei, weil es geht nicht nur um Tierkommunikation, sondern es geht um etwas ganz, ganz, ganz Wesentliches, was ich jedem Menschen einfach nur ans Herz lege. Und da ist schon das Wort Wesen, ja, da geht es um eine viel tiefere oder viel höhere Ebene. Und dann möchte ich dir noch von der YouTube-Dokumentation erzählen, die vor, ich glaube, 7 Jahren gedreht worden ist. Ich habe mit Anna Breitenbach darüber gesprochen und die Filmproduktionsfirma, die das damals gedreht hat, ist vor einigen Jahren pleite gegangen. Eine andere Filmproduktionsfirma hat das Ganze aufgekauft und hat das nochmal, weil es ja schon einige Jahre her ist, ein bisschen, moderner gestaltet, um mehr Klicks zu bekommen. Und gleichzeitig wurde an den höchst emotionalsten Stellen Werbung gesetzt, wo dein Herz komplett offen ist. Sie wusste das gar nicht. Ich habe ihr das erzählt und sie war total schockiert gewesen. Deswegen, ich verlinke euch in den Shownotes das Originalvideo, was ohne Werbung sein sollte. Weil sie hat mir erzählt, dass sie auf diese Dokumentation keinerlei Rechte mehr hat. Und wenn sie jetzt Unterricht geben würde, dieses Video präsentieren möchte, muss sie ziemlich viel Geld dafür zahlen. Obwohl sie die Hauptrolle ist. So ist es aber eben manchmal. Und ich habe sie auch gefragt, warum sie kein neues Video macht. Und das ist mir natürlich dadurch erst bewusst geworden, das kostet immens viel Geld. Und die letzten Monate ist in Südafrika, was das angeht, gar nichts gelaufen. Gleichzeitig braucht es auch sehr viel Zeit, denn sie möchte ja die wahrhaftigen Momente einfangen und arbeitet eben mit Tieren, wo du nicht einfach mal Schnips sagen kannst und jetzt mach doch mal das und jetzt mach doch mal das. Und dementsprechend braucht es sehr, sehr, sehr viel Zeit. Und ich wünsche ihr so, so sehr, dass sie irgendwann nochmal die Möglichkeit bekommt, eine eigene Dokumentation zu produzieren. Ich werde euch alle Links von Anna Breitenbach in die Shownotes setzen. Ich von Herzen bitte ich euch, diese Frau einfach zu supporten, egal in welche Richtung. Sie hat auch eine Donation-Based-Seite und sammelt Spenden für Wildtiere. Und genauso gut wünsche ich ihr so, so viel Erfolg mit diesem Online-Kurs, diesem 6-Wochen-Kurs. Schaut euch das Ganze an, da ist auch ein ganz tolles Video dabei zu Beginn. Und vielleicht sehen wir uns online und es wäre schön, wenn diese Message so viele Menschen wie möglich erreicht und ich bin euch jetzt schon mega, mega dankbar. Ich bin dir mega, mega dankbar, wenn du dieses Interview teilst an all deine Lieben, an alle, wo du glaubst, dass das sie im Herzen erreicht und das Herz ein Stück weit mehr öffnet. Und ja, danke für dein Sein. Danke, dass du heute wieder so fleißig dabei warst. Und an all die treuen Hörerinnen und Hörer und Zuschauer und Zuschauerinnen, danke, dass es dich gibt.